worst case scenario, murder me, and my little brother was lowered into the ice-cold earth 24 hours ago. Every time the fucker in the driver's seat next to me coasts through the snow a little too recklessly, all I can see is Jackie's supposedly extra-safe people carrier hurtling off the road and smashing into a tree, killing Ben in the process.
Little tense? Zeth asks,
the suggestion of a smile twitching at the corner of his mouth. Kind of surprising. I wouldn't have thought the guy capable of such a thing. I brush off his comment, pulling my pack of smokes out of my pocket. What's the big deal with this bag anyway? I've seen everything inside it, nothing irreplaceable.
I'm sentimental about my tools, he replies. Had some of them for well over a decade. And besides,
he drifts across the double yellow line, crossing onto the wrong side of the road as we hurtle through yet another bend.
It doesn't matter what the bag contains, what it's worth, or if it can be replaced. It's mine. It belongs to me. I don't let two-bit con artists from the middle of fucking nowhere steal my shit, kid. You let one person take something small one day, they're trying to take that which you hold dearest the next. Bad for business.
Didn't think you were a businessman.
I'm whatever the fuck I want to be when the moment takes me, shithead. And you light that cigarette in my car without asking, you're gonna wind up with a broken hand, you feel me?
I've already sparked the lighter. The flame hovers 2 centimeters away from the end of the smoke that I've already put in my mouth. I consider holding the wavering yellow flame against the cigarette and pulling on it hard just to defy him. But I meet his dark, flat stare and think better of it.
You mind?
I ask, laying the attitude on thick. Zeth turns to look straight ahead out of the windshield again.
Be my guest.
The smoke burns at the back of my throat, making me feel sick, but I pull on it hard again and again until I hit the filter. Shame I don't have any Jack on me. I could really use a drink. Across Raleigh, Silver's waiting for me to come over for dinner. Cam's in the middle of making lasagna or some shit. There's a girl who loves me, ready to hold me and kiss me and make all of this godforsaken shit feel a teeny tiny bit better. But I'm happy to be headed in the opposite direction. I don't want to feel better. I want to feel worse, because that's what I fucking deserve, isn't it? If I'd gotten my shit together a little sooner and not been such a fuck-up for so long, then perhaps I could have convinced CPS to give me custody of Ben early. If I hadn't been so damned fixated on teaching Gary Quincy a lesson for treating me like garbage, then I might have been able to devote my energy towards the things that really mattered. Ben could have been living with me a goddamn year ago. Then he would never have been in that car with Jackie, driving through the night.
To see you? Because you'd landed your ass in prison, Alex. They could have been safe and sound, enjoying Hawaii, but no. You all right there, princess? Zeth rumbles. You're looking a little peaky.
Taking another cigarette out of the pack, I light it, scowling deeply. I'm giving you what you came here for. That's all you need to worry about. My general well-being's none of your concern. He laughs under his breath.
So much drama. I forgot what 17 was like.
Fuck you, prick. What, you think you're gonna doctor fucking film me now? You kill people for money, old man. Let's not forget that. And I'm a teenager, so what? I've had to deal with far more shit than most adults do in their entire lifetimes. I stood over my mom when they buried her. I stood over my little brother when they buried him yesterday. My girlfriend thinks I'm an unfeeling piece of shit because I can't mourn properly. And oh, she's recovering from being attacked and nearly fucking murdered as well, just to really ice that cake nice and good. Now I'm here dealing with your hostile ass, so I get to be a little shitty, yeah? The past month has been fucking brutal. The cherry on the cigarette flares as I pull on it angrily, bracing myself. I wait for the pain to arrive. A guy like Zeth doesn't let people talk to him like he's something they scraped off their shoe just because they're having a hard time. There's always retribution for that level of disrespect. But the pain never comes. I shoot him a casual glance out of the corner of my eye. He's focusing on the road, his brow furrowed. But other than that, he doesn't look like he's about to smash my face into the console.
I know what it's like to lose a sibling. He says softly as his gravelly voice allows anyway. I had a sister. He trails off, the front of the car filling with an unspoken tension. The mention of his sister brought back painful memories by the looks of things. Not my problem, though. Just because he can put himself in my shoes and comprehend what's going on in my head doesn't mean we're going to be best fucking friends. Just drive, I grumble, flicking the smoke out of the open window. No point in dredging up pointless shit anyway. Zeth follows closer than my shadow as I run up the fire escape to the apartment. The fucker should have waited down by the Camaro. I'm hardly going to try and bolt, what with Monty locked in the trunk of his vehicle. But I keep a civil tongue in my head, better to refrain from antagonizing the bastard at this stage in the proceedings. Once I've handed over the bag, he'll disappear from my life and I'll never have to see him again. From everything Monty told me about the owner of his precious duffel bag, Zeth's a big fucking deal in Seattle. Unlikely that he'll need to come out this way again anytime soon. Nice place, he comments, following me down the hallway. Admittedly, I've let things slide ever since Maeve showed up to deliver her life-shattering news. The apartment's a mess, clothes lying in crumpled piles all over the place. No dirty dishes or takeout cartons, though. I haven't eaten properly in days, so that's a bonus, I guess. I intend on heading straight for the bedroom, but Zeth has other ideas. He sidles past me into the kitchen, his sharp eyes taking everything in. Leaning against the door jamb, I watch as he opens up the utility closet and stares intently at the bucket of cleaning products on the shelf inside. What? You think I got someone lying in wait for you? I ask. Who fucking knows? Satisfied that there's no one in the cleaning closet waiting to jump out and spritz him with Windex, Zeth kicks the door closed and turns to face me. He sees my shattered cell phone sitting on the counter and quirks an eyebrow at me. You run that thing over or what? Sure. I don't need to explain shit to him. Cool. Where's the bag, kid? It's still sitting in the bottom of the walk-in closet in the bedroom, right where I dumped it the night I moved in. This way. He follows on my heels again as I enter the bedroom. I head straight for the closet and grab the bag for him, thrusting it into his chest. It's all there, apart from the gun, of course. Zeth doesn't look too stoked about this. Where's the gun? Police lockup? They confiscated it. How the fuck did that happen? What do you think? I shot someone with it. They took it away from me. Zeth lets out a surprising bark of laughter that catches me off guard. That's funny? I ask. He nods, just once, a curt, efficient movement. Sure, why the fuck not? I can picture you shooting someone and getting away with it. You're a hellraiser, huh, kid? I don't know if I'm supposed to take this as a compliment. It's hard enough trying to figure out if he's fucking with me. Bitterly, I agree with him. Looks like I'm turning out to be my father's son. Giacomo Moretti would be proud if only he knew how. Like a slowly deflating balloon, Zeth's amused expression wilts. You're Jack Moretti's boy. Oh, fucking great. Just fucking great. Why am I not surprised that a stone-cold killer like this guy knows my father? Not voluntarily, I tell him. Zeth grunts, hoisting the straps of the duffel bag over his shoulder. Looks like you just lost your job at that shithole Cohen runs. You got money? I still have close to 70 grand in a pillowcase under the floorboards in the bedroom, courtesy of all the runs I did for Monty. Not that it's any of this fucker's business. What, am I supposed to believe that he feels sorry for me? He hurled a hunting knife at my head 35 minutes ago. Plenty, I tell him. Zeth nods, sticking his hand into his pocket, taking out his iPhone. In a matter of seconds, he's produced a paperclip from somewhere, popped out the SIM card, and then he's tossing the device up in the air. I catch it before it can hit the floor, frowning as the strange bastard turns and walks down the hallway toward the door. I know all about shitty fathers, too, he rumbles over his shoulder. You seem like you might be smart, Alex. Keep it that way. Stay away from guys like Montgomery Cohen and Giacomo Moretti. Hey, don't you want your phone back? Keep it. It's a burner. 11. Alex. I don't go to Silver's. After Zeth leaves with Monty still kicking and screaming in the trunk of his Camaro, I sit in the car, turning the keys over in my hand, trying to pull my shit together. I can't make head nor tails of what's been going on lately. It's all just too fucking much, and I don't think I can trust myself to be the person I need to be. How am I supposed to be good for Silver, help her recover from her ordeal with Jake, when I'm too fucking broken to hold myself together? How can she comfort me when she wakes up clawing at her throat every morning trying to free herself from a noose that isn't there? We're both so bruised and battered that it feels as though we're both going to try and support the other, only to break and unintentionally let them fall. I don't want to do that to her. I love her so fucking much. The last thing I want to do is let her down. I need her more than I need the air in my lungs, but I also need her to be okay, which leaves me in a complicated, confusing situation. She won't be okay with me around. Currently, she's sacrificing her own sanity for the sake of mine, and that's not healthy, for her or for me. In the end, because I'm a weak piece of shit, I do drive over to the Parisi's place. I don't go inside, though. I sit on the curb at the end of their driveway with the engine idling, watching the lights go on and off in the house as Silver and her father move from room to room. The snow that paused earlier returns with a vengeance, and for a little while I feel cocooned inside the car, with the air vents blowing hot air on full blast and the steady, throaty purr of the engine vibrating the entire vehicle. The world falls away, and nothing exists apart from me, the Camaro, and the promise of Silver, safely tucked away in the house at the top of the driveway. She texts me eventually. Silver. You thinking about coming inside? She must have spotted me out of a window. Slowly I type out a response and hit send. Me. Will you still love me if I say I can't? Silver. No matter what. Cursing myself for being such a weak fuck, I start the Camaro's engine and I drive off into the night. Message received. Message received from Maeve Rogers on Sunday, January 2nd at 8:22 p.m. Hi, Alex. Me again. I'll stop calling if you actually pick up, you know. Listen, I know this is tough. You miss your brother. I can't even imagine how much you miss him. It'll help if you talk about it, though. Believe me. I'll be here when you're ready. Just please call back, okay? Press 1 to save this message. Press 2 to... Message deleted.
12. Silver. Good morning, students of Raleigh High. Principal Darhauer, Miss Gilchrist, and the rest of the Raleigh High faculty would like to wish you all a bright and happy new year. We hope you enjoyed the Christmas holidays and made the most of your time with family and friends. After a long and well-earned break, we now return to Raleigh to create, learn, and excel in all fields of academia. The date is Monday, January the 3rd, students. Let's make today excellent in every way. As one, the entire student body stands in stunned horror, heads cricked at weird angles, staring at the brand new PA speakers that have been mounted in the hallways, classrooms, and changing rooms of Raleigh High. Shiny and new, the speakers have metal cages around them, bolted to the walls, as if Darhauer and his cronies think we might object to the new additions and rip them from the walls. While our Under the Sea theme has been a big hit for numerous successive years, a new initiative at Raleigh means that we'll be opening up a ballot box outside the cafeteria this week where suggestions can be made for this year's senior prom theme. Please note, all suggestions must be sensible and within reason. Any inappropriate, vulgar, or offensive suggestions will be dismissed out of hand without discussion. Thank you for your attention, students. Go, Roughnecks, go! Confused chatter breaks out in the hallway as a loud, cheery chime blares out of the speaker, signaling the end of the morning's announcements. We've never had a PA system at Raleigh before, never needed one. But this new addition to our small, controlled ecosystem is a welcome one in my eyes. See, for the time being, no one's looking at me as I shove my books into my locker and rummage through my bag, trying to find a working pen. They're all too astonished by the weird, old new technology that's invaded our little world to be thinking about Silver Parisi. I embrace the moment, reveling in an anonymity that cannot last. Raleigh's a small town, and people gossip here like mother hens. Everyone knows what happened during break. Jacob Weaving's larger-than-life presence is noticeably missing already, and it won't be long before my fellow students begin to ask questions. I have a few questions of my own. Namely, where the hell is Alessandro Moretti? He texted me the other night, so obviously he has a new phone. He hasn't made any attempt to find or talk to me since then, though. Hasn't shown up at the house. I dropped by his apartment yesterday, but he didn't answer the door and the Camaro was gone. It's as though he's just fallen off the face of the earth. This was not how the start of the year was supposed to go. Alex and I were supposed to come back to Raleigh on top of our game, ready to buckle down, get through the remaining months before graduation, focus on getting good grades so Alex could apply for custody of Ben. Now it feels as though none of it is worth it. College doesn't even seem like a consideration anymore. Further education's more of an afterthought at the moment. Without Ben, Jesus, I don't know what Alex will have to work towards now. I take the long way around to get to my first class of the day, walking the outside perimeter of the building in order to avoid the long hallway that leads to the gym. I can still hear the wet slap and squeak of my bare, bloody feet fighting for purchase against the linoleum whenever I close my eyes. At some point, I'll have to face my fears and walk that hallway. Worse, I'll have to actually go into the gymnasium. For today, however, I'm showing myself a little kindness and making an exception. Not to mention, taking the outside route to class also has the added benefit of avoiding all of the senior prom posters that are already covering every free inch of wall space inside the hallways of Raleigh High. A year ago, I would have been so pumped about our last hurrah as seniors before graduation, but I was an entirely different person back then. The wind claws at my jacket, trying to rip it from my body as I hurry toward the south entrance of the school where the English labs are located. My hands on the ice-slick handle, bitingly cold, when someone grabs me by the shoulder. I react without thinking. I twist and launch my right fist into the air at the same time, half expecting it to hit nothing. Pain jangles up my hand into my wrist and then my shoulder, letting me know that my aim was true, though. Ah, fuck! What the fucking... A guy in a leather jacket dances back, nearly slipping over on a patch of ice, holding a tattooed hand to his face. When he removes the hand, his palm is spattered with blood, and my heart stops dead in my chest. At first, I think it's Alex, a much older, worn version of him that's been left out in the wind and the rain for a couple of decades. His eyes, a deep chestnut brown, are so similar to Alex's in both color and shape. His dark hair and the cut of his jaw and the way his nose juts uncompromisingly from his face. All of it seems so Alex that for a second I can't make sense of what I'm seeing. Then the guy turns his attention to me, our eyes meeting, and I realize my mistake. His eyes are nothing like Alex's after all. They're harder, unkind, unforgiving, and flinty in a disturbing way that makes my blood run cold. The resemblance is undeniable. I even see Ben in the man standing before me. But he isn't the Moretti I fell in love with. I pull my jacket tighter around my body, stepping back toward the door. What the hell do you think you're doing?
Didn't mean to startle you, darling. I should have called out or something. Don't worry, I'm not some creepy pervert.
I know exactly who you are. What do you want? The man in the leather jacket looks taken aback by this.
Really? He told you about me?
No, but I have eyes in my head, don't I? It's pretty obvious you're his father. What can I do for you, Mr. Moretti?
Oh, Jack, please, he says, waving me off with his bloody hand.
I see where I broke the skin now, a small cut just below his nose. Mr. Moretti's just fine, I answer stiffly. We're not friends. I've never even met you before.
Surely Alex has told you about me, though.
He sounds so certain of himself, as if there's no way his son wouldn't have regaled me with all kinds of stories about his notorious father. He did tell me he thought you might be dead once, I inform him in a chilly tone. He also told me how you skipped out on your family when they needed you most. The cocksure smile on Giacomo's face sags, the assertive spark in his eye guttering out and slowly dying.
Yeah, well, everything's so cut and dry when you're a kid. He was too young to understand what was going on at the time. Things were complicated, weren't they? His mother was a difficult woman. You understand how these things go.
Taking a step back, halfway through the door, I meet his eyes. I think he's trying to cow me with his direct gaze. Poor, timid little girl, unsettled by the magnetic, overwhelming presence of a grown man in a motorcycle club cut. But he's got another thing coming. I know a bully when I see one, and I know every underhanded trick in their playbook. I've stared down death and didn't look away. I sure as hell won't be subjugated by a washed-up, powerless old man like Giacomo Moretti. No, actually, I tell him, I don't understand. I know that your wife was sick, and you ducked out on her and your two young kids when things got hard, rather than staying to figure out how to help her. Seems pretty cowardly to me. Giacomo smiles, emotionless, devoid of any humor.
Well, shit. Aren't you a little spitfire? I can see why Alex likes you.
I'm sorry, I'm confused. Is there something I can help you with? Because you're on Raleigh High property, you know. I have to get to class, and I'd hate for a member of staff to see you and get the wrong impression. I know you're not a pedophile, prowling around the English block looking for kids to lure into the back of a van, but Principal Darhauer might not give you the benefit of the doubt. Things have been kind of crazy around here lately. Sarcasm drips from every word. I've really outdone myself on the passive-aggressive front. On its own, my statement was polite enough, a friendly warning offered to a stranger. My tone, however, is anything but friendly, and paints a very vivid picture in which Giacomo is arrested and carted off Raleigh property without so much as a by your leave. Alex's father runs his tongue over his teeth, flaring his nostrils as he glances down at his worn leather boots.
You're protective of him. I like that. It's good that he has you in his life.
We're good for each other, I correct him.
I just wanted to know if he was doing okay.
In that case, no. Alex is doing pretty miserably right now. His little brother just died. He'll come through the other side eventually, though. He has me and he has my dad. We'll both be here to help him for as long as he needs us. Now, if you don't mind, the bell's about to ring and I don't want to be late.
Keep your damn mouth shut, Giacomo. Just keep that stupid, filthy, lying trap closed.
He doesn't, no matter how hard I wish it. I've almost managed to turn away from him before he calls out after me.
Silver! Hey, Silver! That wasn't all I wanted.
Sighing heavily under my breath, I spin back around. Why am I not surprised?
I want to make things right with Alex. With Alex's mom gone and now Ben too, it isn't right that there should be such a massive divide between us. He's my son, Silver. I'm his father. I appreciate your dad for looking out for my boy, but it ain't his job. All I'm asking for is a chance. Just one chance to fix things and be there for him.
My emotions riot, bouncing all over the place. No way in hell should he be trying to pull the old, he's my son, your dad should mind his own damn business bullshit. He has absolutely no fucking right. I marshal my face into a blank mask, tamping down my thoughts. I can be mad all I want on Alex's behalf. In the end, none of this is up to me.
Then you need to say all of that to Alex, Mr. Moretti.
He won't listen. He has a shitty temper. He won't sit still long enough for me to get the words out.
I'm sure he's right. Alex hates this man. He probably wouldn't piss on him if he was on fire.
What do you want me to do about it?
Just talk to him. Play devil's advocate for me. Make him see that I'm genuine and I've changed. Convince him that I only have his best interests at heart. You can do that for me, can't you?
There he goes again, wheedling, turning on the charm, treating me like a naive little girl who can't see right through his bullshit. I laugh harshly, clouds of fog forming on my breath.
No, I can't do that for you. I don't know anything about you. I sure as fuck don't know that you're genuine. I don't know the first thing about your motives.
I'm guessing they have very little to do with Alex's best fucking interest, though.
I won't try to convince him of anything. If you're serious about everything you just said, then you're gonna have to show him that yourself. Giacomo doesn't like my answer. He shoves his hands into his jacket pockets, slowly shaking his head.
Such a foul mouth on such a pretty little thing, he muses.
This time, I do turn around, and I do walk away. Oh, Mr. Moretti, you have no fucking idea.
13. Alex. It's pathetic, really, stalking Silver. I'm her boyfriend, for fuck's sake. I'm done with the part of our story where I have to duck my head and hide every time she pauses in a hallway and glances over her shoulder. I definitely shouldn't be trailing her out in the cold, hood pulled down low over my eyes, creeping around after her like I'm about to drag her into the forest and kidnap her. We've been through so much shit since we met. There's nothing I can't talk to her about. Nothing I can't say to her. But I was supposed to get stronger as time passed by. Things were supposed to get easier for us, not harder. And after Ben's death... Fuck, I'm not the guy I'm supposed to be right now. I've always prided myself on knowing who I am and knowing what I want, fighting for my goals no matter how deep the shit I had to wade through became. But this version of me? This shattered, cored out, broken man, bereft and without even the smallest glimmer of hope? What good am I like this? I'm useless. I'm a fucking train wreck. She's broken and hurting, too. Today's the first day back at school, and she'd rather face the sleet and the cold than walk 50 feet past the gym, for fuck's sake. I don't even know how she's mustered the strength to show up here today after all of the shit that's gone down inside this school. She's a fucking miracle, this girl. Remarkable, and so much stronger than anyone can possibly realize. The icy wind blasts into me as I carefully tread through the frosted, brittle blades of grass, staying close to the building's perimeter. Rolling my feet, heel toe, heel toe, heel toe, I try not to make too much noise, but I don't really need to worry. The snap and crunch of the undergrowth giving way beneath the soles of my boots is loud, but the low, mournful howl of the wind is louder. Up ahead, Silver's hair stirs, creating a halo of blonde and copper around her head as she turns the corner at the end of the building. One last look at her before she disappears inside the school. That's all I really need. Somehow that will be enough to sustain me until I can drive by her place later on tonight. Hurrying, I jog the remaining distance to the end of the brick wall, sucking in a breath and holding it in my lungs, as if that will somehow render me invisible. I'm two long strides away from turning the corner myself when I hear his voice.
I didn't mean to startle you. I should have called out or something.
What the actual fuck? Anger sizzles up my spine like a spark chasing along a fuse. He shouldn't be here. He has no fucking right to be here, approaching her like this. The bastard's lost his fucking mind. My hands have already made fists. My feet move with a mind of their own, propelling me forward, urging me to run around the corner and make the fucker bleed for this outrageous intrusion, but...
Hush, Passerotto. Let him speak. Then you'll know what he wants and how to make him leave.
It goes against every scrap of sense I possess, but I manage to still myself, planting my feet into the frozen earth. Paralyzed, too afraid to move a millimeter in case I snap and lose all control. I lean against the wall, closing my eyes, straining to hear what's being said against the rustling of the leaves. I almost chip my teeth when my father starts to make excuses for his past behavior. I break the skin of my palms, fingernails gouging into my flesh, when he comments on how protective Silver is over me. Hot bile burns at the back of my throat. He tries to worm his way into her good graces, asking for her help to get me on side. Pride and relief wash over me like a winter squall when she basically tells him to go fuck himself. That's my girl, Silver. That's my girl. The door to the building slams closed behind her when she goes, sealing her inside the light and the warmth of Raleigh High, and a deadly calm settles over me. The anger's still there, but it isn't the searing brand it was a moment ago. No, this is a different kind of anger altogether. The kind that cools to tempered steel and runs soul deep, woven into the very fabric of a man's being. I shove away from the wall, rounding the corner just as my father begins to walk away. "What the fuck do you think you're doing?" I growl. He stops in his tracks, his head whipping in my direction. A calculating smile forms on his lips as he looks me up and down.
"Well, well, well, the man himself. Didn't think I was going to see you today, son."
"Bullshit. You know I'm enrolled here." He stifles a laugh, tipping his head back to look up at the stark winter sky.
"Yeah, well, you have to be enrolled somewhere. There's a difference between being on the books and actually showing up, right? And us Moretti's, we're hardly the further education type, are we?"
He says further education like it's something to be embarrassed about. A dirty, shameful secret that guys like us would ever consider being associated with such a lame concept as learning. "You don't know shit, old man. Just because you were happy to remain ignorant the rest of your life doesn't mean the rest of us want that. You keep yourself stupid. And to what end? To look cool? Hate to burst your bubble, Giacomo, but flunking out of high school, not even bothering to get a GED, that's not cool. That's the dumbest thing a guy can do." He grimaces, his mouth pulling down at the corners.
"I got plenty of money, kid. A solid roof over my head. Food in the cupboards.
That's more than you left mom with." He slowly blinks, visibly sidestepping the comment.
"What did I need math and science and fucking theater class for, huh? It's all fucking pointless. You'd do just fine if you turned around and walked out of this place right now. Waste of fucking time, if you ask me."
"No one did ask you, though, did they? No one's asked you for anything at all. You're the only one wasting your time. I'll never forgive you for what you did. You could have hurt me all day long. You could have rejected me and Ben, and I would have found a way to make my peace with it. Men like you have been disappointing their kids since the dawn of fucking time, but the way you hurt her, it was unforgivable. She was convinced you were going to come back, you know? She used to talk to you all the time, like you were standing on the other side of the front door, about to come through at any fucking second."
"That's because she was fucking crazy, Alessandro."
The words explode out of his mouth, echoing out across the dell, the deep cavern behind the school, repeating them back to him like the report of a gunshot. Rooted to the spot, I stand perfectly still as he rushes toward me, jabbing a finger angrily into my face.
"You have no idea what it was like, boy. She was unstable when we met, but it was cute back then. Kinda exciting. You never knew what she was gonna do next. The unpredictability was fun. But when you were born, she..."
He shakes his head, disgust carved deep into the planes of his face.
"She lost her fucking mind, Alex, and not in a fun way. She tried to stab me, for fuck's sake. How's a guy supposed to handle a bitch when she's fucking certifiable like that?
If you refer to my mother as a bitch again, I will personally see to it that you never eat solid food again." There's an electrical storm building in my chest, and any second I'll crack open and unleash it upon him. Jack holds out his hands in a placating gesture.
"Alex, this is exactly why I came to see your girl first. I hoped she'd help you see that I didn't come here to cause problems, that all I wanted was to build a relationship between us finally, after way too many years."
I lunge forward, slamming my hands into his chest. "Where were you when they locked me and Benny in that group home, huh?" A current of fury bristles just beneath the surface of my skin. "Where were you when I got kicked out of my first foster home?" I push him again, grinding my teeth together. "For the second!" He does a good job of standing his ground, but when I push him again, he loses his footing, slipping in the rotten snow.
"What about the third home, Jack? Did you know the guy in my third home wouldn't let me wear underwear?
He used to strip me fucking naked and lock me in a dog crate in the garage. He thought it was funny to piss on me through the bars when he came drunk every other night. The miserable fucker's eyes round out, like I've just said the most hurtful thing I could possibly think of.
I didn't. No, Alex, I wouldn't have.
Fuck him. Fuck him and his fake guilt. Right, you wouldn't have done a thing. I spit. You didn't even check on us.
Ben, he whispers. Did they hurt him too?
Manic laughter bubbles up the back of my throat. Stepping away from him, putting a healthy amount of space between us, I let my head rock back. And I unleash it, howling raw, insane laughter up at the sky. No, you know, Ben was actually pretty fucking lucky. How ironic is that? I fought tooth and nail and I railed against Jackie, but at least she fucking loved him. She never would have hurt him. Not on purpose. He had a stable home, which is more than I can say I ever had. Not that any of it matters now, of course, but Ben is fucking dead and you can go to fucking hell. I hurl myself at him, letting it all go. The lightning inside me needs out and won't be told no a second longer. Jack throws up his hands, shielding his face, but I'm not out to break his nose. A broken nose is painful, but it's not the end of the world. I home in on a more fragile part of his body, his chest and his stomach. If I can break a few of his ribs, I might be able to do some more serious damage underneath, deflate a lung, stop his heart. I don't know, just something. I drive my fists into his sides and his chest with as much force as I can muster, blow after blow raining down, and he immediately topples over onto his ass. Not what I was expecting. I wait for him to get up, blowing hard. Switching my weight from one foot to the other, ready to fucking end this. But then Jack rolls onto his side in the dirty snow and hacks, wheezing as he tries to sit himself up. And all I see is a pathetic loser in a leather jacket pretending to be something he's not, pretending that he still fucking matters. God damn it. I drag my hands through my hair, pulling on it out of frustration. Just get the fuck out of here, Jack. I'm sick of looking at your face. For the last time, do us both a solid and leave Raleigh in your rear view, okay? I don't want you here. Huffing, my father gets to his feet, straightening out his t-shirt and his jacket. His face is sheet white, the same color as the bleached out sky. His bottom lip is busted open, staining his teeth bright crimson.
What if I could, son? He pants. But I'm gonna be here for at least another couple of weeks. I'm staying at the Motel 6. If you change your mind and wanna talk.
I watch him hobbling off toward the parking lot, amazed that those few hits I got in didn't miraculously make me feel better. During the long nights and the endless days when I've imagined laying into my old man, I was so fucking sure that they would. I haven't brought a bag with me. No notebooks, no textbooks, no pens. I basically came to Raleigh to observe Silver from a distance. But after what just happened with Jack, my plans have changed dramatically. Jack dropped out of school the moment he could legally get away with it. He took shitty construction jobs, never rising above the lowest paid shit kicker position because he was never willing to put the hard yards in. He gave up on everything before he even got started, and that went for my mother, too. If I bail on school just because Ben's not here anymore, and I walk away from Silver because things have gotten hard, then how am I really any different than him? Ben would be disappointed in me if I quit on everything now, when I was the one who was always encouraging him to do better, be stronger, to put his head down and focus on his education and the life he was going to build for himself. When I enter the classroom on the first floor of the English block, Ms. Swift squints at me over the top of her iPad, frowning. She's a mousy, quirky-looking woman, and her bangs are permanently in her eyes.
Mr. Moretti, I don't believe you're in this class.
At the mention of my name, Silver's head snaps up, her brightly shining eyes searching me out. It kills me that her go-to reaction is immediate worry. I can read it on her face from a mile away. Her cheeks are still flushed from the cold outside, the end of her nose adorably pink. She's so damn beautiful, it makes me breathless to even look at her. I smile in an attempt to quash the look of panic she's wearing, hoping that her mind will stop racing quite so much. I requested a class change, Miss Swift. I don't feel adequately challenged in my current English class. Miss Swift looks down at her iPad, flitting through a couple of screens.
I don't see a transfer notification from the office here, Alex. You can't just show up to an AP class because you feel like it. Making it into an AP class is, well, it's kind of a big deal, so...
The students on the front row avoid eye contact with me, staring down at their open textbooks like they're afraid I'm about to hulk out and trash the place. A couple of the kids on the second row brave a glance or two at me while also watching Ms. Swift, waiting to see what she'll do. I'm not really paying attention to any of them, though. I'm too focused on Silver, trying to communicate a stumbling apology to her with my eyes. I won't bring your class average down, I inform Ms. Swift tightly. I'm here to learn.
You're sure? Because it looks like you came to make eyes at Silver Parisi rather than open your mind to the brilliance of the English language.
I turn my full attention to her now, my gaze drilling into her face. I swear, I won't cause any trouble. I'll sit by the window. I won't even be near Silver. She doesn't look too convinced. Doesn't sound it either.
All right. By the window it is. Waste your time and we'll boot you out of the room quicker than you can say, Geoffrey Chaucer, who? And I will be checking with Karen after lunch to make sure you put that request in. Sit your butt down, Mr. Moretti.
I go and claim the only available seat left in the room. Third row, directly under the AC vent, which is churning out cold air despite the fact that there are icicles dangling from the top of the casement on the other side of the window. Great. I actually need to borrow a pen and some paper and a textbook. Ms. Swift eyes me balefully.
Ah, you clearly did come here to learn, didn't you?
Her frosty smile doesn't affect me. I'm chilled to the bone and only getting colder with the AC continually blasting me. And I've just seriously screwed myself over by electing to bump myself up a class. The workload's bound to be way harder than my regular class, but that's all background noise. I'm breathing the same air that Silver's breathing. I feel the proximity of her, and the wild, frenetic beast inside of me that's been bucking and pulling on its chains finally calms, finally breathes a massive sigh of relief. This is where I'm supposed to be. And if joining yet another AP class and burning my brain cells to a crisp means that I get to be near her, then so fucking be it. 14. Alex. I tell her about Xander's confession concerning my father. I tell her about my run-in with Monty. I tell her I won't be working at the Rock anymore. Once I've reassured her that I won't be struggling to pay rent for a long while yet, she seems to take everything in stride. Predictably, she's not too happy that I vanished on her, though.
You get to be sad, Alex. You get to be lost and hurt and turned around. What you don't get to do is ghost me. I'm not okay with that. We don't do that to each other.
She deserves to chew me out for the shit I've been pulling over the past couple of days. I owe her better than I've been giving her. And she has every right to tear me a new one for vanishing on her so spectacularly. But in this moment, the air shivering with snow out of the Camaro's window and everything so peaceful and quiet, all I want to do is kiss her. I hold her by the nape of her neck, quickly pulling her to me, and I bring my mouth down on hers before she can finish her sentence. She tastes of cinnamon and mint and the ginger tea she likes to drink sometimes. I consume all of it, all of her, plunging my tongue into her mouth with a wild abandon that halts her breath in her lungs. I guess she wasn't banking on being kissed like she's about to get fucked. It takes her a second to respond.
When she does, it's with a shuddering sigh that makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up straight. Her fingers wind into my hair, tracing down the sides of my face, running over my collarbones, until she's driving her nails into the tops of my shoulders, panting out sharp blasts of air down her nose. She's so fucking biteable. I suck her lower lip into my mouth, tugging on it with my front teeth, and Silver lets out a little whimper that has another part of me altogether standing to attention. Reluctantly, I break off the kiss before we go too far. Sure, I want her real bad. Goes without saying that I want my dick inside her, with her shivering out an orgasm on top of me. But this is more important than sex. I need to make things right with her. If we apologize and make up, communicating only through sex, we'll forget how to actually talk about our shit. And I'm no genius when it comes to emotions, but I'm pretty sure that'll end in disaster. I cradle her face in my hands, committing the dazed, heated look on her face to memory. Then I gently stroke the tip of my index finger down the length of her nose, rubbing away the wet sheen of her mouth so I can't be distracted by how hot she is, all pouty and swollen like this. "I let you down," I whisper. "I'm fucking sorry." Her eyes still unfocused, she shakes her head, swallowing.
"You didn't let anyone down. That's the whole point. No one expects you to just get up, dust yourself off, and move on like nothing happened. You lost him. You lost Ben, and..."
The words, sharp as knives, flay me to the bone. I've been trying to outrun them ever since I found out Ben was dead. But this time, I settle into my seat and I face them. I feel them, and I try not to flee from the truth. Ben's dead. My brother is gone, and he isn't coming back. I'm never going to sit across from him at the diner and dip French fries into a milkshake with him. We're never going to watch scary movies together. The sound of his incredibly rare laughter is never going to fill the spare room of the apartment I got just so he could come and live with me. These are hard realities to face. I don't want to accept any of it, but that's the thing about death. It can't be ignored. You just have to find a way to live with the hand it deals you, and that sucks more than I can bear. Silver clears her throat, plucking at the collar of my t-shirt, worrying at the stitching.
"I'm not mad at you for disappearing, not really. I don't know how you're supposed to handle any of this, okay? There are no guidelines for coping with grief."
"There are, actually. There are millions of them online, and every single one of them is horseshit. I'm gonna be okay. I just need to figure out how to put one foot in front of the other and..." She rests her chin on my shoulder, curling her hair around her finger.
"And?"
"And I'm supposed to go to college, then get a good job, right? Pay off my loans over the next 20 fucking years and get a mortgage. Become a responsible human being who regrets covering himself in tattoos. That's what comes next." Leaning back, Silver's disturbingly quiet for a very long time. After a while, she rests the back of her head against the frosted window behind her and lets out a long breath.
"What would your mom say about that? What did she want for you when you grew up?"
"Well, shit. I could really do without unleashing my mother on the inside of this car. To remember her is to give her life, and she's just too big and overwhelming to deal with right now." Silver asked the question, though, and she looks like she's expecting an answer. She wanted me to make music. She wanted me to be an artist like Giacomo. She wanted me to be an Arctic explorer, a deep sea diver. She wanted me to be happy." Silver smiles softly, brushing the pad of her thumb along the line of my jaw, making my stubble rasp in the silent car.
"She wanted you to be free," she says in a hushed tone. "None of the things she envisioned for you involved office jobs, mortgages, or regrets. You're not made for that world, Alessandro. You were made for colorful ink and the rumble of an engine and an open highway full of possibilities and uncertainty. That's what your life looks like after high school."
The oxygen rushes out of my lungs in a winded, long exhale.
I'm not interested in a future that doesn't feature you in it, Argento.
Who said anything about that? I've told you once already, I'm not going anywhere. We'll weather whatever storms come our way together. I promise. We have so far, haven't we?
Man, when did I turn into such a little bitch? When did I start feeling this swollen ache in my chest anytime Silver talks about the future? It feels like I'm holding something fragile in my hands, delicate beyond measure, and the slightest twitch will cause it to shatter. My whole life, I've had to be forceful and brash in order to make it from one day to the next. This entire thing with Silver requires finesse, though. It requires a gentle touch that I sure as shit wasn't born with. As the bell rings inside the school, across the other side of the parking lot, I find myself praying that I can figure it all out before I end up permanently breaking something.
15. Silver. 3 weeks later. I heard she got busted sucking Jake's dick and the new kid lost his temper. What kind of psycho carries a gun around anyway? I've been saying there's something off with that Moretti guy ever since he walked through the front door. God, you're such a dipshit. If that was true, how did she end up in the hospital with broken ribs and a rope burn around her neck? What the fuck, dude? How the hell am I supposed to have all the answers? What am I, a bad daytime TV detective? All I know is, Jake's supposed to come into some of his inheritance after his 18th birthday. Watch this space. That bitch is going to be knocking on his door, holding out her unmanicured hand, looking for a payout. Seriously, have you seen her hands? They are gross. Her fingers are actually calloused, like an old man's. Oh my God, Leah, you're such a bitch! An eruption of laughter bounces off the tiled walls of the changing room, a pack of hyenas cackling over a fresh kill. I roll my eyes, marveling at how stupid the girls sound, tittering to one another on the other side of the lockers. The past 3 weeks have been fine. With both Casey and Jake gone, no one's bothered openly attacking me. What would be the point? There's no one left to impress with their random acts of cruelty, and so I'm mostly ignored. Every once in a while, this kind of bullshit takes place, though. Tall tales and sharp words crafted to entertain at my expense. The girls know I'm here, which means their little gossip sessions being conducted with the specific purpose of fucking with me. Sucks for them that I've heard way worse. Nothing they or anyone else says can hurt me now. I'm literally fucking untouchable. Bored by the whole affair, I finish tying my checks, straighten out my Raleigh sweatpants, and sit myself down on the bench next to me. Olives, I say loudly. The girls on the other side of the locker fall auspiciously quiet. In the 40s after the war, my gram married my grandpa. They were young and in love, and they wanted to move away from their parents. So they bought a bunch of old farming land in Toscana and decided to start growing olives. A head pops around the side of the locker. Blonde hair blown out to perfection, black cat eyeliner, and heavy mascara. Ridiculously overdrawn lips that look kind of clownish. It's Leah Prescott and the spray-tanned flesh. She was always a low-ranked member of the Sirens, but with Casey gone, all sorts of power plays have been set in motion as a number of the girls jostle for the position of Queen Bee. The fuck are you talking about? Olives? She lets out a disgusted sigh. Ugh, you're that desperate for attention now that you just start rambling about fucking olives? I give her a saccharine sweet smile. They're one of Italy's biggest exports. Graham and Pops built up themselves an olive empire. When they moved to America in the 70s, they outsourced the management of the business and lived off the profit. Graham sold the business in the mid-90s when my Pops died. I won't go into specifics, but let's just say the Parisi family did damn well for themselves. We're what some people might call obscenely well off. I'm set for life. I sure as fuck don't need Jacob Weaving's inheritance money, but even if I were planning on extorting cash out of that piece of shit, I'd have a tough time. He's a psychotic rapist. He's gonna spend the next 30 years rotting in a jail cell with all of his assets frozen. Now, do you want to head into the gym and actually practice, or are you gonna hang around out here, pulling your kick shorts out of your ass crack and popping pineapple hubba bubba like the basic bitch that you are? Leah's jaw drops. Lo and behold, there, wedged into the side of her cheek, is a wad of bright yellow gum.
Ew, she grouses. Have you been staring at my ass? Gross. Don't even think about it, okay?
God, seriously? Yawn. I make mention of her ass, and suddenly I'm hitting on her?
If I were into girls, Leah, you would not be on my radar. I'm only interested in creatures with a soul, and you're a fucking vampire.
Rude! Wait, what kind of vampire? Like a Bella Swan kind of vampire? Or the dusty old hag kind out of one of those old black and white movies?
Girls!
Coach Foley's voice roars into the changing room, causing one of the girls still loitering on the other side of the lockers to scream out loud in surprise.
I can hear your bickering from my office on the other side of the damn hall. What in God's green earth is wrong with you?
Coach Foley used to work at Raleigh, but she retired a couple of years ago. Darhauer enticed her away from her gardening and her cross-country mountain biking to cover for Coach Quentin while he takes a leave of absence. I'm glad it's Foley who will be coaching the Sirens during my first term back on the team. She always kept Casey in check whenever my ex-best friend used to haze the new girls who joined the team. I wasn't strong or brave enough to shut Case down myself. No one was. To do such a thing would have been social suicide. But Coach Foley didn't give a shit about Casey's ice queen routine. She was immune to every single one of Casey's power plays, and she'll be immune to Leah's brand of bullshit now, too.
Get your asses into the gym right now, and if I hear any of you say fuck one more time, you're all gonna wind up in detention. Get moving. Silver, hang back a sec. I need to go over some game dates with you.
Bitch, Leah mutters under her breath. You've been off the team a long time, Parisi. Don't think you're just gonna waltz back in and claim your old spot at the top of the Siren food chain. It won't be that easy.
I smiled tightly, pressing my lips into a thin line.
Siren politics don't interest me in the slightest, Leah. I'm only here for the college application credits. Believe me, the floor's all yours. Her mouth opens and closes like a fish out of water, gasping for air. If I stand still long enough, I'm sure she'll come up with a cutting comeback about how she doesn't need my permission to jostle for role of Siren's head bitch. But I'm already walking past her, heading for Coach Foley's office. Leah's friends chitter and mumble quietly behind me. I can't tell if they're gossiping about me or their beloved leader. Can't bring myself to care either. They're so high school, clinging on to the unimportant, unnecessary stuff. They still think that surviving at Raleigh is tough, but they're so fucking wrong. Surviving here is easy as hell once you've been raped and nearly strangled to death.
I know I've been gone a while, but I read the papers. I still have friends on the faculty here. And I have to say, I'm surprised you haven't transferred out to Bellingham, Silver. What you've had to deal with.
Coach Foley puffs out her cheeks, eyes wide as she shakes her head.
It's unconscionable that the situation wasn't dealt with properly before it could come to a head like that. Principal Darhauer should have investigated the matter and taken the appropriate steps to make sure you were safe. I'm sorry that didn't happen. Truly, I am.
My eyebrows hit my hairline. It takes a second to register that a member of Raleigh's staff just apologized to me for what happened. Foley's the first person to openly acknowledge that it even happened in the first place. The other teachers have all been making an obvious effort to avoid eye contact. There must have been a staff meeting held in my honor, detailing how little attention should be drawn to my existence.
No need to look so surprised.
Foley steeples her fingers together.
The school administration's been woefully corrupt for the better part of the past decade. It's part of the reason why I retired early in the first place. My position here is temporary now, though, so I can say whatever the hell I like. The Weaving family are evil incarnate, and they deserve everything coming to them. I doubt the board's going to replace Principal Darhauer midway through an academic year. A regime change like that might be too upsetting to the status quo. But believe me, it's on the cards. It'll be too late to right the wrongs he's done to you. But next year, hopefully, there will be someone a little more competent in the driver's seat.
I'm astonished that she'd say all of this to me. She's talking to me like I'm, well, like I'm not only an actual, real-life person with real feelings, but like I'm an adult who is due an explanation. I remain mute, uncomfortably gripping the sides of the metal chair I'm sitting on, waiting for this unexpected moment to be over.
All that aside, I won't be bringing this up again, and I won't be going easy on you, Parisi. Mollycoddling does more damage than good, and I'm guessing you might want things to be as normal as possible for your remaining months here as a senior. Am I way off base?
No, Coach Foley. You're right on base.
Good. Perfunctory. All business. I like this about her. She shuffles a bunch of papers, organizing them into one neat stack, which she places in the out tray on her desk. There are only so many spots on this team. You were a good cheerleader once upon a time, but you were always deferring to Casey, dumbing down your own talents so she could shine. I knew you could be better, and now I'm demanding it from you. There won't be any infighting, no backstabbing, no arguments, and no drama. If I see things going south with the sirens, I will confiscate your damn uniforms and disband this shit quicker than you can say, "Go, rebels, go." Do we understand each other?
You mean roughnecks?
No, I mean rebels, kiddo. This football team was called the Raleigh Rebels for 22 years before Caleb Weaving showed up and made Jim change their name. He wanted an all-new brand for his son to rule over. But Jake isn't here anymore, and neither is his fucking father. It's about time this school remembered its roots. We're going back to the rebels. Now, I repeat, do we understand each other, Silver?
For someone who just reprimanded us for cursing, her language choice is a little colorful. I nod, though, answering her question. I'm here to train and nothing else. You won't get any trouble out of me.
What about that boyfriend of yours?
Sorry?
The new kid. I haven't seen him yet, but I've heard plenty. Sounds like he's got trouble tattooed on his back.
The tattoo on his back actually says unbreakable, I tell her, my mouth aching around the smile that's trying to bully its way onto my face. Coach Foley gives me a wry, sidelong look.
He's been caught up with the cops before, and now he wants on the football team? I want to know what to expect from him.
I hide my surprise well. Nearly a month has passed since Ben's funeral, and things have been, well, they've been hard. Alex has dipped in and out of that scary, dark recess in his mind, floundering every once in a while as he struggles to overcome his grief. But at the same time, he's been trying. He's been studying ferociously, acing all of his assignments. Every day he runs 5 miles in the cold sleet and snow before school. He works on his bike in the small garage at the back of the hardware store. He's even started picking up some shifts when Henry needs to drive down to Seattle for supplies. He might not be working at The Rock anymore, but he's found plenty of other ways to fill his time. Every single moment of his day is full. He's always moving, always busy, always keeping his mind occupied. And now he wants on the football team again? He tried out at the beginning of the year, but Caleb Weaving had him booted not long after. I assumed he didn't really give a shit. But that can't be true if Coach Foley is right about him requesting his spot back.
Alex is determined. Passionate. He works hard, I tell Coach Foley.
He's still a mess after his brother's death, but he probably needs this. He's trying to stay afloat. He's not going to cause any issues for you, I promise.
Creak?
Quit flailing, Silver. It's done. It's fucking done.
Jake's vicious words taunt me on my approach to the gym. I've been walking around the outside of the school for long enough now. I know I can't avoid it forever. That doesn't mean that my anxiety isn't riding high, though. The last time I walked, or rather I was dragged, down this hallway, I had broken ribs, my face had been mashed to a pulp, and I was about to be hung by the neck from the rafters. Such violent memories are enough to make even the strongest person break out into a cold sweat.
Creak.
You want the pain. You want the humiliation. You want to be degraded, hit, and kicked and spit on. It's all you know now. It breeds inside you like a plague.
I can't differentiate between my heartbeats. My pulse pounds at my temples like a drum. It throbs in the soles of my feet. Dum, 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 dum. Out of control. But wait. The pounding, it isn't my pulse. It's a sound outside of my body. A repetitive banging, stomping. And it's coming from inside the gym.
Oh my God, he's gonna fucking kill him!
Coach Foley frowns, quickening her pace.
What the hell?
I have a bad feeling about this. Too cold and snowy to practice outside right now, the sirens and the rebels are having to share the gym for their training sessions, which makes for seriously close quarters.
A high-pitched scream splits the air in two just as Coach Foley slams the gym doors open and storms her way through the knot of students who have all formed a tight circle around, oh, great, around a very familiar-looking senior with vine tattoos tangled around the column of his neck, and another student with a Dreadnoughts MC badge inked onto his upper right arm. It's Alex and Xander. Of course it fucking is. Coach Foley scowls at me over her shoulder. No issues, huh? I'm assuming one of these morons belongs to you? My face hot with embarrassment, I nod, pointing to Alex. The one who's about to... Ah, crap. Too late. Alex slams his fist into Xander's jaw, and his friend topples over backwards, landing hard on his ass.
Next time he gives you a message to pass on, you know where you can tell him to shove it, Alex roars.
Laboring for breath, Xander collapses flat on his back, hands resting on his ribcage, laughing at the top of his lungs.
Ha ha ha, one of these days, I'll be done letting you use me as a punching bag, man. You're not gonna like it when I start hitting back. Please.
Alex looms over Xander, his face red from exertion.
Don't act like a little bitch on my account. Feel free to fight back anytime.
As far as I can see, you're both being little bitches, Coach Foley snaps. 30 heads turn in unison toward the sound of her voice, including Xander and Alex's. The look on my boyfriend's face when he sees me standing behind Coach Foley says plenty. He knows he's fucked up. He knows I'm disappointed, and he immediately regrets the stunt he just pulled in front of an entire gymnasium full of our classmates. He scrubs his face with his hand, grimacing as he turns away from Coach Foley and begins pacing up and down like a caged lion.
The Lord only knows what the hell this was about, but violence will not be tolerated here, and especially not in this goddamn gymnasium. You hear me? Coach Foley hisses. I'd have thought you know better, Alessandro, considering what went down the last time you were in this space.
Alex shoots a pained look at me out of the corner of his eye, like he's just remembered what happened here with Jacob himself, and his guilt is eating him alive.
Alex, he mutters softly.
Coach Foley shakes her head in confusion.
I'm sorry? My name's Alex.
I don't give a good goddamn what you prefer to be called, Mr. Moretti, she splutters. Only people who act like civilized members of society get any respect from me. At this rate, I'll be calling you fucking Susan for the rest of the year if I decide it fucking suits you. Still on the floor, except now with his hands beneath his head providing a pillow, Xander chuckles maniacally. Probably a bad idea, since the sound draws Coach Foley's attention.
And what the hell are you doing? Taking a siesta? What's your name, princess?
Xander's smile dies.
Judging from the look on your face, it's probably gonna be Mavis.
Perfect. Mavis and Susan. Off you go, ladies. Suicides. You stop when one of you can give me a good enough explanation for the carnage I just walked in on.
What the hell are you still lying there for? Get your ass up off that floor right now!
On the other side of the gym, Leah and her crew snicker behind their hands, giving Alex dirty looks. Their disapproval is a show put on especially for me. They're terrible actresses, though. Alex with his brand new Raleigh Rebels crew t-shirt pulling taut across his chest, and his dark, unruly waves must like the devil himself just tousled them, looks so sexy that I could drop down fucking dead. The girls squint down their noses at him and sneer to try and make me feel bad, but they can't help their treacherous hormones from softening their spite. I see their hunger as their eyes cut him down, and it brings me a savage satisfaction to know that they're never going to get to eat at that table. Xander and Alex shuttle up and down the gym, glaring mutinously at one another every time they pass. The football team and the sirens disperse, plainly disappointed that the fun is over, and each team heads to their respective ends of the gym. Meanwhile, I duck my head, praying that I'm not as red in the face as I feel.
Sorry, Argento.
Alex slows a little as he passes me.
Couldn't help it.
I'm not mad at him. It would have been nice to commence my first day of training with the sirens without a spectacle. Jack, I ask quietly. He asked Xander to try and get you on side. Alex is too far away to respond now, but from the steely, unhappy flare of acknowledgement in his dark brown eyes, I know I'm right. It's surprising that Giacomo hasn't tried to elicit Xander's help before now.
I've waited with bated breath every single day since Alex's father approached me outside of the English block, bracing myself for the next Giacomo Moretti-related incident. It's a miracle that it's taken this long to arrive. I stretch quickly, warming up my muscles, trying to ignore the lancing pain in my ribcage every time I twist, or just how generally stiff and sore I am all over my body. The doctors recommended I wait at least 6 weeks before I attempted any kind of physical activity. It's almost been that long now, but my injuries still aren't completely healed. If I have to sit out on the sidelines, missing my chance to catch up with my own life, then I'm going to lose my mind, though. I'll tolerate the pain. I'm going to have to. The mat area set aside for stretching is small, but the other girls give me a wide berth as I sit down and fold myself over my legs, easing the tension in my hamstrings. Things are going to be really interesting if they don't find a way to get over themselves soon. Cheerleading is all about trust. You have to trust the person next to you to move in sync with you, and you need to trust the person at the bottom of the pyramid to catch you when you leap. Without trust, the whole thing literally falls apart in the blink of an eye, usually with very painful consequences.
Silver?
I look up, and a pair of white Adidas sneakers with pink laces fill my vision. Huh. The sneakers are brand new, the same style as all of the other sirens' footwear, but I only know of one person who wears pink laces. One person who used to dive bomb into Lake Cushman with me during long, hot summers, and who used to giggle and laugh about boys with me in the back conservatory of her parents' house. Slowly, taking a second to prepare myself for whatever is about to come next, I lift my head and look up. Hi, Hal. Her thick strawberry blonde hair is longer than ever. Her siren's uniform is perfect as always, her skirt pleated in a crisp, sharp way that always used to piss Casey off because she could never get hers to look as good. A couple of years ago at an away game, Case even made Halliday switch skirts with her because it was her duty as captain of the sirens to look better than everyone else. Halliday had given up her skirt without flinching, but when Casey had tried to put it on, it had been a size too small, and she couldn't get the zipper up. Suffice it to say, that had not gone down well. Not at all. Casey had given Hal a week to put on 5 pounds, or she was going to have to find somewhere else to sit at lunch. Again, Halliday hadn't flinched. She'd happily gorged herself on donuts and grilled cheese while the rest of us picked at our salads morosely. And by the end of the allotted time, Halliday had in fact gained 6 pounds. On her tits. I still remember Casey's rage when she realized Halliday was still a dress size smaller than she was, but that her rack had become significantly more impressive. She told Hal she looked like a blow-up fuck doll, all the while jealously eyeing the boys on the football team, who all seemed to appreciate Hal's new curves. Now, Halliday warily eyes the other girls. They've all stopped their own stretching routines to surreptitiously watch our exchange.
Hi. I,
she stammers. The last time we were this close, I just pieced together that she was on her way to the rock to strip, and things had gotten pretty fucking weird. At the time, I thought things couldn't have gotten any more uncomfortable between us, but it looks like I was wrong. She shifts anxiously from one foot to the other.
Glad you're back on the team, she says. And I'm glad you're doing better after...
After Jacob hung me from that rafter and made me swing? I point to the specific rafter in question. Better to avoid any confusion. Halliday ducks her head, twin spots of red burning on her cheeks. She looks many things. Ashamed, afraid, mortified, remorseful. I could ease up and try not to be so confrontational, but I'm feeling spiky and her meek approach hasn't made me feel very merciful. She was my friend. One of my best friends. She was the one who found me, shell-shocked and covered in blood, wearing nothing but one of Mr. Wickman's dress shirts and a pint of my own blood at Leon's party. She'd panicked, scared as hell because she'd known something terrible had happened to me, and yet she'd still let Casey spurn me from the group. She could have taken a stand that night and left with me. She could have picked me over Casey, right over wrong. Countless other times during the months that followed when the other students at Raleigh made my life a living hell. So no, I could go easier on her, but I'm not feeling that benevolent. Halliday swallows thickly as she looks up, eyes fixed on the rafter over our heads. I've been doing a damn good job of avoiding looking at it, but I can't stop myself now. To my horror, there's still a piece of police tape fluttering away, high over our heads, snagged on the beam.
"Fuck, Syl," she whispers. Her hand goes to her throat as if she's picturing what it must have felt like to have that noose biting into her skin, tightening, tightening, tightening. I don't know what to say.
So say nothing. I bend back over my leg, grabbing onto my foot so I can pull myself lower into the stretch. It won't change anything. A long, awkward moment passes where Halliday stands silently over me, watching me, and I do absolutely nothing to set her at ease. Inevitably, she speaks again.
"Look, I know you probably hate me, and I don't blame you for that. I've hated myself for the way I treated you. I hated myself when I was doing it." The question burns on the tip of my tongue. "So then why the fuck did you do it, Halliday?"
But it's a question that I already know the answer to. She did it for the same reason I did so many shady, shitty things over the years. You never went against Casey, not if you wanted to survive. I bite the inside of my cheek, waiting for her to continue.
"I don't expect you to forgive me after everything that's happened, but I kind of need your help."
She says the words like she knows just how ridiculous they sound coming out of her mouth. She needs my help? I misheard her. There's no fucking way she just told me that she needs my help. What could you possibly need from me, Halliday? Seems like Raleigh life's been working out for you pretty well since Casey was banished to Seattle. I see everything, and I hear everything. Two skills I picked up quickly once I became public enemy number one at my own high school. Being hyper aware of my surroundings helped me stay ahead of the curveball when Jake and his idiotic buddies on the football team were plotting new and interesting ways to embarrass or humiliate me. When Alex arrived at Raleigh, I began to let things slip, though. I have no idea how Halliday is faring at school now that, for better or worse, there's a Casey Winters-shaped hole in all of our lives. She could be the new Silver 2.0 for all I know, spit on and laughed at in the hallways, abandoned by anyone and everyone who ever called her a friend. But I doubt it. Halliday's way too likable for any of that. She makes a distressed, choking sound that would have made me jump to my feet and hug her once upon a time.
"You can tell me to go to hell if you want to, but I was hoping you'd come with me to the hospital after school today. If you're not busy," she hastily adds.
I'm intrigued. Against my better judgment, I look up again. "The hospital? Why?"
"Because then..."
Again, she makes the distressed sound, pulling a face at Leah Prescott, who is studiously pretending not to listen to our conversation. Halliday tucks her long curls behind her ears, stoops down, and cups her hand to shield the words that come tumbling out of her mouth.
"Zen tried to kill herself. She's not right, mentally. And I figured, I hoped, you might be able to help her."
"And why would I be able to do that?" Halliday's eyes shine like wet glass, like she's hating the fact that I'm actually making her say this.
"Because she went through what you went through, and you were strong enough to endure it."
16. Silver. The smell always hits me hardest. The burn of bleach and hand sanitizer, coupled with the sickly sweet fragrance of flowers that have begun to decay in vases of stale water. I stopper up the back of my nose, careful to breathe through my mouth as I follow behind Halliday, our sneakers squeaking cheerfully against the linoleum. As always, the strip lights overhead are slightly too bright. As always, their inaudible hum buzzes irritatingly against my eardrums, unheard but definitely felt. Nurses pass us as we make our way through the hospital corridors. I know many of their names. Tracy, fresh out of nursing school, whose 15-year-old brother stole her car and drove it to Tacoma, where he sold it to buy heroin. Lindsay, who loves birds and hates winter because all of the ospreys, Caspian terns, and tufted puffins migrate to weather the cold elsewhere. Mitch, who sounds like Michael Bublé when he sings, but can't dance to save his life. Philippa, the sternest RN on staff, who strikes fear into the hearts of her subordinates,
but who also makes sure to swipe extra pudding cups from the cafeteria for the sick kids on the cancer ward. My face is healed now, the bruising faded and gone, and the nurse's eyes skate over me as if they don't even recognize me, which is a relief. I hated my time here, confined to my uncomfortable hospital bed, unable to go anywhere or do anything. I hated their pity the most, though. I despised being poor Silver Parisi, the weak, vulnerable girl who nearly died at the hands of a mad, spoiled rich boy. Halliday slows as she nears a set of double doors at the end of the hallway, wringing her hands anxiously.
"The woman on the desk never lets me through," she says. "Zen's mom put a block on visitors. She told me I couldn't see Zen until she comes home, but then I heard the doctor saying it was going to be weeks before they'd consider releasing her. And she shouldn't be alone in there, Silver. She just shouldn't. This place, it's too surgical and cold. It's
hell," I finish for her. I'm lower on sympathy than I ought to be, but I know all too well what it feels like to stare at the tile of a hospital room ceiling and feel like time has ground to a halt. If my parents hadn't come to see me with Max, I would have lost my ever-loving mind. Setting my jaw, I push my way through the double doors, holding my head high. "Just follow me. Don't look at the nurse on the desk. Just keep close and loosen up, for fuck's sake. You look guilty as fuck, and we haven't even broken any rules yet."
"I'm not good at breaking rules," Halliday mumbles behind me.
This isn't true. I doubt her mom signed off on her stripping at the Rock for one thing, but I keep my mouth shut. Now isn't the time to bring that up. Once we're through the double doors, I beeline for the secure access door that leads to the ward where Zen's room is located. Holy shit. I hesitate when I read the sign taped to the wall. Psychiatric ICU ward.